Pitu Maharaja's meeting with the Kumaras. Text number 41. Maitreya Vacha Cha Evam Brahma Putrena Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Nehasa Kumarinatma Medhasa Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Katihi Samyak Darshitatma Gati Samyak Darshitatma Gati Samyak Pasasya Vacha Tang Nipa Pasasya Vacha Tang Nipa Pasasya Vacha Tang Nipa Maitreya Vacha Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasyo Vacha Tang Nipa Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Pashasya Vacha Tang Nipa Maitreya Vacha Seena Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Pashasya Vacha Tang Nipaha Maitreya Vacha Marinatma Medhasa Dasitatma Gati Samya Pashasya Vacha Tang Nipaha Maitreya Vacha Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Gati Samya Prashasya Vacha Tang Nipaha Matadis Maitreya Vacha Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasya Vacha Tang Nipaha Maitreya Vacha Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarinatma Medhasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasya Vacha Tang Nipaha Maitreya Vacha The great sage Maitreya said Sa the king Evam thus Brahma Putrena, by the son of Lord Brahma, Kumarena, by one of the Kumaras, Atma Medhasa, well-versed in spiritual knowledge. Darshita, being shown. Atmagati, spiritual advancement. Samyak, completely. Prasasya, worshipping. Uvacha, said. Tam, unto him. Nipa, the king. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus enlightened in complete spiritual knowledge by the son of Brahma, one of the Kumaras, who was complete in spiritual knowledge, the king worshipped them in the following words. Responsibly, please. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus enlightened in complete spiritual knowledge by the son of Brahma, one of the Kumaras, who was complete in spiritual knowledge, the king worshipped them in the following words. Purport. In this verse, the word Atman Vedasa is commented upon by Sripad Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who says that Atmani means, quote, unto Lord Krishna, Paramatmani, unquote. Lord Krishna is Paramatma, Isvara Parama Krishna, from the Samhita 15.1. Therefore, one whose mind is acting fully in Krishna conscious is called Atmamedha. This may be contrasted to the word Grihamedhi, which refers to one whose brain is always engrossed with thoughts of material activities. The Atmamedha is always thinking of Krishna's activities and Krishna consciousness. Since Sanat Kumar, who was a son of Lord Brahma, was fully Krishna conscious, he could point out the path of spiritual advancement. The word Atma Gati refers to that path of activities by which one can make progress in understanding Krishna. Om Ganatamandasya Ganandana Salakaya Tuksurn Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanandikam Pandayam Siguro Sita Padakamalam Si Gurun Vaishnavamsta Si Rupam Sagirutam Jahaganam Raghunatam Vitam Gantajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Si Radha Krishna Padam Jahaganam Lalita Si Vishakandutamsta Hey Krishna Kruna Sindho Dina Vada Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tatta Kanta Godange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sate Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pantakapa Dhruvyashta Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Bhangam Mangayate Giram Yakripatamam Vande Sigurum Dinatalanam. So, what I was going to focus on today is the sloka in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna Vacha, Stita Pragyasya Ka Vasa, Samadhi Stashagesava, Stita Dikyam Prabhaseta, Kim Asita Rajeta Kim. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? And what is his language? How does he sit? And how does he walk? So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about questions and answers. So this is basically, it's about speaking and hearing. So the speakers in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are qualified speakers because of purified consciousness. In response to this sloka that I just read in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atman yivatmanatusta stita pragas kadochate. So prajahati means to give up. Yada kaman, desires for sense gratification. So this is in response to Arjuna's first part of the question. Being thus enlightened in complete spiritual knowledge. Okay? What are the symptoms of those whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? The consciousness of a living entity who is in purified consciousness is that he's given up to all desires for sense gratification. It's not possible to give up pleasures in this world unless you have something to replace it that is better. So this is the answer to the first part of this question by Krishna to Arjuna. So then he goes, how does he speak? And then we you know, it's kind of like, you know, I used to think, you read the Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna says, you know, how does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And Krishna doesn't answer. He doesn't appear to answer. But actually he does. And he says, if you just keep going, Dukeshu anavigdimana, Sukeshu vigitasriha, Vita Vaya Varaga Vaya Krodha Stita Dhir Muna Uchate. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. Ya sarvatran abhishnehas tat tat prapya subhosubha navinandati nadvaishti tasya pragapratishtita. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may attain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So what Krishna is saying as far as speaking goes, for a person who is elevated in transcendental consciousness, is there, when things come at them in the material world, they're not bothered by them. So therefore their speech is unaffected by the emotions of anger, grief, lamentation, etc. Not only these things, but also when something good happens to someone whose consciousness is merged in transcendence, they're not elated when that happens either. They maintain an even keel of equilibrium as far as their consciousness is concerned, no matter what happens to them in the material world. And they're always ready to have, with some gravity, speak and glorify about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like in this sloka in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Kumaras, they descended from the heavenly planets without warning to, to come and visit King Prithu. Preetu, he didn't have to, you know, ask his advisors, so what do we do now? You know, what's our, what's the next, what are we supposed to do when saintly people come? First of all, he immediately stood up with folded hands and greeted them, paid his obeisances, and then immediately arranged for bathing their feet and gave them very nice words of welcome and praise. And now, the Kumaras, they're going to reciprocate. It's not that, you know, you get welcomed and you get your feet washed and then you know, some nice words and praise of you are there, and then you just sit there and do nothing. These people, they're very, very, very qualified. So the Kumaras, actually one of the Kumaras, it doesn't say which one, now he's going to give some words of enlightenment to Maharaj Preetu. And there's a sloka in the Gita in the 18th chapter, actually 17th chapter, I'm sorry, that describes about speech. It's called austerity of speech. Anuvigna karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat svadaya vyasanam chaiva vadmayam tapauchate. So, first of all, when you're speaking, it should be anuvega vakyam, which means words that do not agitate the minds of others. Then, satyam, truthful, priya, dear, hitam, beneficial, and jayat, which, svadaya vyasanam chaiva vanmayam tapamuchate. There's also regarding regularly reciting Vedic literatures. So this is a process of devotional services, the hearing and also chanting. So chanting the Vedic literatures, like chanting slokas, chanting chapters of Bhagavad Gita, this is all in under the purview of austerity of speech. And in the purport to Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, he gives some guidelines on how to speak properly. If you're like a guru instructing your students, then you can speak the truth, even if it hurts, even if it's cutting. And you're giving some very pertinent instructions, and it may be a little shocking to your students. But when you're talking to people that aren't your students, then you have to cushion your words. You don't speak if it will agitate their minds. You don't speak the truth even if it will agitate their minds. You be careful of how you speak. You want to attract people to take up the process of Krishna consciousness. And even if you're speaking the truth, you don't want to dissuade someone who's in ignorance from doing this. So you're very, very careful. This is called austerity of speech. Then, of course, you don't speak nonsense when you're, you know, you're talking to people about spiritual life. You keep the topic pertinent and with some meaning to it. You don't veer off on some tangent that doesn't have any relevance. Then, in spiritual circles, when you're speaking to people that have knowledge of spiritual subject matter, whatever you say you should be able to back up by stating where in Shastra did you get that point. Where is it stated in the Shastra that what you said? So you should be able to always state, you know, what you told, said, by backing it up with Shastra. And then pleasing to the ear. In other words, you may speak truth that hurts, but it should be done in a nice way. So there's art to speaking. Speaking isn't something that is just done. Like, you know, you go to the doctor's office and you sit with your legs dangling off his bench and he hits a little rubber hammer on your, right below your knee, and your knee jerks. This is, so similarly, this whole point made by Krishna to Arjuna about, you know, how does a person in transcendence speak? He doesn't speak with like that knee-jerk reaction. He measures his words. He's very careful, and he speaks in a very pleasing way, and even if someone has praised him, he's not elated, and his speech doesn't reflect that. If someone blames him, he remains sober and is not bothered by that, and his speech doesn't reflect that. And in this way, one who's in that, it's a symptom of one who's not in the bodily concept of life. He's free from identifying himself with the material body. So this is all in relationship to speaking. Because what we speak is a reflection of what's going on in our inner self. So Krishna, when he speaks from depth. It's not superficial. You know, you'd expect some type of answer. Like, he sits in a full lotus, or he speaks, with poetry, and he's, you know, with flowery words. And how does he, let's see, what were some of the things that, how does he walk? You know, he walks very gracefully. How does he sit? So these things are going, these answers are coming along in the Bhagavad Gita one after another. So then we get into how does he sit? And there's this sloka, the 58th sloka. This is the first sloka I ever learned. 36 years ago. Yada samharate chayam kramoham ganada sarvashaha indiyan indiyar tevyas tasya pragya pratishtita. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects as the tortoise draws his limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. Along with the next one, Vishaya Vanivartante, Nirahara Shadehina, Rasa Varjam Yasopisha, Param Drisparna Vartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects still remains. But by ceasing such enjoyment and by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So, this is how he sits. It's what's going on when he's not active. He's very careful to control his mind and control his eyes and not absorb these things in sensual subject matter. The textbook sensual matter is, of course, for the man is looking at, you know, observing the beautiful woman. What does someone who's in transcendence? Well, for one thing, if he's really in transcendence, Vidyavini Asampane Brahmanigavi Hasani Sunitana Sapakicha Panditasamadarshanaha. He sees a beautiful woman, a cow, a dog, a dog eater, outcast. He sees everyone the same. He sees, oh, here's another material, just another material body. You know, the male body, and then there's the female body, and there's a dog body, there's an elephant body. And he doesn't really feel anything pulling in his consciousness. So he's not really, doesn't really have to be careful. Because he's not bothered by no matter what he sees. But someone who is, then they have to, if they're sincere about spiritual life, they withdraw their senses like a tortoise. Draws its senses within the shelter, so to speak. And by doing this and practicing spiritual life, gradually he shows Krishna how sincere he is in spiritual life, and Krishna awards him with a higher taste. And then he doesn't have to struggle so much anymore. It's not that he sees a so-called beautiful woman, or a woman sees some handsome man with a lot of money. It's that doesn't have any effect on the consciousness. So then, you know, we've read Bhagavad Gita so many times, and where does it say, you know, how does someone in transcendence, how does he walk? You know? So this answer to this question is in the 64th shloka of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayan indiraischaran atma vashyar vidheyatma prasadam adigachati. That a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regular principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So this is, when one is active, one is walking, one isn't sitting anymore, one isn't just absorbed in his own world, in his own consciousness, that's sitting. When one is out and about in the world, he's walking. And Srila Viswanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, it is not a fault to accept the objects of the senses if it is done with controlled senses, with absence of attachments of the objects in mind. So just like a saintly person may be talking to a woman, but he's not feeling like a physical attraction, because he's simply giving instruction to this other living entity in spiritual life. So this is a situation of someone who's in transcendence. He can move around in this world, and he doesn't have to, you know, be, you know, putting on his blinders when a member of the opposite sex goes, you know, within the purview of his eyes. He doesn't have to do that. He sees a form. It's a female form. It doesn't make any difference to him, no more than he sees an elephant or a cow or anything. There's a spirit soul in there, and it's moving about, walking around, moving in this world. So this is the consciousness, someone who's absorbed in transcendence. They are not bothered. And it's described that one can take sannyas, one is qualified for sannyas when one is absorbed in his internal life more than his external life. He's satisfied studying the shastra, explaining the shastra, He's not so interested in social intercourse, in social life, socializing with other living entities in a mundane way. But he's fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And then he's qualified to be a sannyasi. It's one in the renounced order of life. What is renunciation? Anasaktasya vishayani karam upayudita nirbanda krishna sambande yukta varadi uchite. What is real renunciation is simply when you see everything in relation to Krishna and you can utilize it in Krishna's service. So a true sannyasi, he can utilize anything that is made up with a material energy if he utilizes it to serve Krishna in some way or other. So today's a very special day, and I know it's 8:30, it's rich for me to go. But I thought I would end here in regards to we're anticipating in the Bhagavatam, the Kumaras, one of the Kumaras is going to speak to Maharaj Kritu. But today is the disappearance day of Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami, he basically lived in almost the whole duration of the 1500s. So it's, you know, at the latter end of, he was present when Lord Chaitanya was present. Actually, Lord Chaitanya went to Ramakali when he was a baby and blessed the baby and foretold that he would be a great scholar in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So, we're not, many people don't know, but there wasn't this Rupanand Sanatan Goswami brothers, but there was another brother also, Anupam. And he was the father of Jiva Goswami. And he died kind of like early on. He was actually a great devotee of Ramachandra. And he was encouraged by Lord Chaitanya to pursue this worship in his presence. So, like his two brothers, he renounced his service in the government. They had very high posts in the government of Hussein Shah. Not simply just, but they were very, you know, very high ministers and getting very good salaries because they were very, very qualified and very, very intelligent people. Not only Brahmanas by birth, but Brahmanas by qualification. And from a very young age, because obviously Jiva Goswami is a baby, and his father's leaves. And so Jiva Goswami, because his father had previously gotten very good salary, he grew up in actually quite a cushy, you know, quite an opulent atmosphere. You know, nice house, nice clothes, servants, and so on and so forth. But he was kind of aloof to all this. And he found his pleasure in, from very early on, worshipping deities of Krishna Balaram. He became very attached to worshipping deities of Krishna Balaram. And when he was very young, and he heard that his father had died, he became very unsettled. And he was encouraged by some pundits to go on pilgrimage, because some other pilgrims were leaving this place where they were living, Kalinagram, to Navadvip. So Jiva Goswami, when he was like 16 years old, he went to Navadvip. And Lord Nityananda was there. And while in Navadvip, Lord Nityananda personally walked around the nine islands of Navadvip and explained all the holy places. And this is the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur explaining what happened, you know, what Lord Nityananda told Jiva Goswami as they walked around the nine islands. And then Lord Nityananda told him After some time, he introduced Jiva Goswami to all the associates of late Lord Chaitanya, like Mother Sachi, Vishnupriya, Srivas Thakur. So he was able to, get the association of these exalted personalities. So then after that, Lord Nityananda said that he ordered him that you should go to Varanasi and study Vedanta under a personality called Sri Madhusudan Vachaspati, who was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he went to Varanasi, as ordered by Lord Nityananda, and studied. And then after that, he went to Vrindavan and joined his two uncles, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. So can you imagine, you're from a very, very wealthy family. Not only you're wealthy, but you're very, very smart. Generally speaking, when people are really smart and they have a lot of, they can become very proud. But what did Jiva Goswami do when he went to Vrindavan? He served his uncles, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, like a menial servant, getting them their water for their baths, giving them massage, cooking, cleaning their rooms, and he took initiation from Rupa Goswami. And because he had this propensity, he was very knowledgeable. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami engaged Jiva Goswami in proofreading the books that they were writing. And in this way, he utilized his abilities in language, in speech, the written speech, to help his uncles out. And in this way, many, many, many years passed. And Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami eventually left this world. And when they left this world, it was Jiva Goswami who was the prominent Vaishnava. He became the prominent Vaishnava in Vrindavan. And people would he would be one that people went to for the, that had questions. And he was writing also. And somebody, he did commentaries on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He did commentaries on, by his uncle. And so many other books he wrote, but Gopal Champu and the Satsandarbhas are prominent. Now the Satsandarbhas is actually for preaching purposes. His goal is to convince the Vaishnavas and other Sampradayas that about the authenticity of Lord Chaitanya and the supreme worship of Radha and Krishna. And he goes through it, it's an explanation actually of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and to convince people also that Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost shastra. Because in different sampradayas, people are not, they're not thinking like this. They're thinking that Lord Vishnu is supreme, and they don't necessarily have any faith in Lord Chaitanya, and Radha and Krishna worship is not part of their practices, so to speak. So Jiva Goswami, utilizing his God-given intellect, compiled the Satsandarbhas. And in this way, he lived his life and service to Mahaprabhu, carrying on what Mahaprabhu asked his uncles to do. He was younger, and so then they left the world, and he carried on. So this was And today, if someone wants, there's many, many people in the circles of scholars that will do like a doctorate thesis on the teachings of Jiva Goswami. A very, very intelligent personality describing the glories of Lord Chaitanya and Radha Krishna. It's also the disappearance day of Jagadish Pandit. Jagadish Pandit is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila. The savior of the world, he was a thundercloud of Krishna praying, who rained showers of mercy upon everyone. He was from Guwahati, Assam, and he moved with his wife as when he grew up. He was a neighbor to Jagannath Mishra, the father of Lord Chaitanya. And when Lord Chaitanya was born, Jagannath Mishra's wife, Jagadish Pandit's wife, was actually sometimes a nursemaid for Lord Chaitanya. So this is like some Vatsalya Rasa there. And Jagadish Pandit, although the same age approximately as Lord Chaitanya's father, became like a dancer in the kirtan part of Lord Chaitanya, and was very, very, very actively dancing in Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. And one day Lord Chaitanya, as a little boy, cried. And usually when Lord Chaitanya cried when he was very young, the ladies would get around and chant the Maha Mantra and he would stop. But this time he did it. This was on a codicy. And finally he said, today is Ekadasi. And no one had told him it was Ekadasi. And he said that Jagadish and Hiranya, his wife, had cooked so many nice things. I want some of that prasad. So they had cooked grains on Ekadasi for their deity of Vishnu. And so when he... they went and got the prasad. He was a young boy. They fed him the grains on the Ekadasi. And Lord Chaitanya was so pleased with Jagadish Pandit that he revealed his identity to them. Something like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He revealed Sadguru to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He revealed the form of like Gopal Krishna, baby Krishna. To this Jagadish Pandit. So, not a whole lot is understood about Jagadish Pandit. This is about all I have to say about him. So, any questions, comments on the what I said earlier, or any one thing you wanted to add, anything about Jiva Goswami or Jagadish Pandit? Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Jiva Goswami ki, Jagannath Pandit ki.